Hey everybody, and welcome along to this week's edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast, brought to you in association with KPMG, and I'm your host, Peter Finnan. So a few weeks ago, we did a bit of an industry pod where we had some club managers from up and down the country, from north and south, and we were also joined by Pat Finn, former CEO of the GUI. So in the meantime, golf in Northern Ireland has opened up. We've been waiting a little while down south here, and thankfully we have that reopening date, and it's only a few days away at this stage. So in the meantime, we decided to reach out to Golf Ireland and see if someone would join us to have a chat about what's been going on behind the scenes and all things Golf Ireland and the reopening of golf across the whole island of Ireland. Delighted to say Golf Ireland took up that invite, and we're joined this week by the current CEO of Golf Ireland, Mark Kennelly. Hi Mark, how are you?
Hi Peter, thanks for having me.
Not at all. We're seeing some green shoots out there now at the moment, so golf, we're nearly back.
Yeah, another few days, Peter. It's been a long wait, but we're very much looking forward to it, and hopefully it'll be the last time golf has to reopen. This will be a permanent reopening, and that's what we're all planning for and hoping for.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But like, Golf Ireland officially took over as the governing body for the sport on the island from January 1st this year. Obviously, we've had no golf since then. It hasn't really been the launch that you've expected or planned, but how have the first few months been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, I suppose, like every other sector in society. I mean, golf has been severely affected by the pandemic over the last year, and that has affected Golf Ireland to an extent. But that said, I mean, we did manage to get the transition process completed on time. We went through a whole process of establishing our regional structures in the autumn, which was a lot more challenging than we expected with remote meetings and remote voting and postal voting. But we still had tremendous cooperation from the golf clubs throughout the island, and we got it done. And we completed the transition on time to become operational on the 1st of January. And our new board was then formed in February, and that's now up and running, and our regional structures are up and running. But obviously, you know, we wouldn't have anticipated not having golf for this prolonged period of time. And we're very pleased that very challenging period is beginning to is beginning to look behind us now, and we look forward with a lot of optimism for the rest of 2021.
And as you said, we have a restart date. It's this Monday the 26th, and we're all delighted to have it. But can you talk us through the process of getting to that result from a Golf Ireland perspective for us?
Sure, Peter. So, I mean, as soon as the country was put back into level 5 lockdown at the end of December, I mean, we immediately set about making the case for golf to be included, you know, in the early stages of the reopening of society. That situation for the whole country, I think, was pretty bleak in January. You know, the COVID numbers were extremely high. But notwithstanding that, I mean, we put a very detailed written submission together, which we presented to government in January, you know, highlighting the safety of golf, highlighting the very many proven health and mental health benefits of golf. And we had a process of intense engagement right across the government system, from Sport Ireland to the health authorities, to the government, the relevant government departments, you know, throughout really the months of January, February and March, to continue to highlight and make that objective case based on the facts. And the biggest asset we had in making that argument was the very strong track record at golf club level of keeping golf safe in Ireland while we were open in 2020. I mean, we're not aware of a single cluster or outbreak directly associated with the playing of golf. And that is a real testament to the work and diligence of the clubs in keeping not just their own clubs and their own members safe, but in doing so, keeping the wider community safe in the course of a pandemic that has, you know, cost thousands of people their lives, including, unfortunately, many people in the golf community. And I think, you know, the responsibility taken on by the golf community in making public health their first priority, you know, really paid off in the engagement we had to try and get golf to be included in one of the first activities to be allowed to resume. in 2021, you know, it really stood to us that we, you know, we had that evidence and we had that proof. So we're, you know, we're very happy about that. And even though, you know, the resumption is coming later than we would have hoped for, and we fully understand, you know, that many golfers have been very frustrated at the, you know, the up and down nature of this pandemic. It's, you know, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for, I think, everybody. And, you know, we were equally frustrated, you know, every time we saw negative trends in the pandemic numbers. We knew that that was going to make our task even more challenging, but we stuck with it. And, you know, our stated objective right from the beginning of the year was to get all golf opened at the earliest possible opportunity and in the initial stage of reopening, and that's what's happening on Monday. But we would, of course, we would have preferred if it was earlier.
Yeah.
But as you know, towards the end of March, you know, a government decision was made that the, you know, the numbers were not going in the right direction, and all reopening, you know, other sectors that were expecting to reopen before now also remained closed. So we're happy. I mean, look, you know, we have something to build on. You know, it will be an opening with some initial restrictions, and even those restrictions, we're actively talking to the authorities about when they can be relaxed, so we get back to normal activity, full activity as soon as possible.
And it does sound, and I think anyone that understands the whole process knows that there's a hell of a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that you've had to deal with over the last few months. But I suppose Golf Ireland members up and down the country have made it clear on various platforms that they maybe would have preferred to hear a little more from Golf Ireland directly on what was being discussed with government and with regard to a date for reopening. And I think people understand they were government decisions, but members felt a little out of touch, I suppose, with the communication.
Well, I mean, look, Peter, I fully understand. Like, we were all frustrated, and a lot of our members were frustrated. But I mean, we had adopted a conscious strategy of making a fact-based, rational argument for the resumption of golf. And part of that was not to, you know, engage in megaphone diplomacy or negotiate in public. And that is the approach we took. By definition, then, it meant that we, you know, a lot of the engagement we couldn't share publicly or share with our membership. But I think we did. I mean, we did regularly update our membership on the key arguments we were making. But I mean, you know, other sectors have chosen to adopt a different, more public approach to negotiation. We felt, and I think this is now justified by the outcome, that making the rational argument and not engaging in megaphone diplomacy was the best route back for golf.
Okay, and there is a perception out there, I suppose, as well, that the inappropriately named Golfgate scandal has sort of come back to bite the sport around this time. Did you ever get that sense while you were chatting to government sources or on negotiating golf's return? Did you ever get that sense that was ever brought up as a...
Not at all, Peter. And I think, you know, the decision makers here know, as we know, that the incident you mentioned was relating to a, you know, a dinner function in a hotel. It had nothing to do with golf. And in actual fact, the group that organised it have never been a registered golf society, like many others are. So, I mean, I found in our engagement with the government authorities, the issue was never even raised, because the people making the decisions know the track record of golf in diligence in terms of applying our protocols and keeping golf safe from club level right up. So it was never raised as a problem at all.
And I know, from a government's point of view, a lot of the stuff that were introduced are obviously beyond your control, I suppose. It's a pandemic. But when you look at other countries' approach to outdoor sports like golf that are perceived to be low risk, I suppose, do you think golf has been treated fairly in Ireland? Like, we've obviously been closed longer than any other country in the world.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything fair about this pandemic. I mean, it has hit, you know, the whole country, the whole globe, actually, very, very severely for the last 12 months. And, you know, rather than comparing what happened in Ireland with other countries, because, like, these are government decisions, they're not Golf Ireland decisions, I think what we have, the benchmark we have to set is golf being treated fairly in an Irish context? Are we among the first activities to be permitted to resume, and we are. Would we have preferred the lockdown to have been shorter? Of course we would. But that decision was out of our hands. The case we made is when there is a reopening of activity, we should be among the first because of the points you've made about the relative safety of golf compared to other activities. So, I mean, I other than that, I can't really enter into a comparison with other countries because other countries took different approaches to the pandemic, not just sport, but, you know, other countries took a different approach to how they managed the entire process.
Yeah, and I'm quite conscious as well. We are sitting on a positive situation now that we have golf coming back this week. And I suppose since we've got the announcement 4 weeks ago at this stage that we had a return date, there's obviously been a lot of work going on in the background around the protocols now that we return to, and the issues around some of those protocols. So two of those being the sort of two households can play together and players must abide by the travel restrictions and travel within their county or 20 kilometers from home. So what process did Golf Ireland go through to put together that return to golf protocol to incorporate these restrictions? Because obviously there's a lot at stake with these return to golf protocols with clubs, especially businesses and stuff like that around golf, not just golfers.
Sure. And I mean, our objective throughout the process has been to make golf as open as we possibly can. So the two issues you mentioned are not specific to the Golf Ireland protocols. These are both government restrictions. So the limitation, and we hope it will be a very short limitation on two households per group, applies to all permitted activity in level five, not just golf. So the fact that it's in our protocol is merely reflecting what has been dictated to us and to every other activity by government. You know, people can see it very clearly on gov.ie that for the activities that are allowed to reopen next week, you know, golf and tennis being the main ones, that the two household limit applies initially. And that has actually always been part of the level five restrictions by government. But we're, even as we speak, Peter, I mean, we are actively talking to the authorities about how we can move beyond that and when it is safe and appropriate to do it, because we, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we want golf to get back to normal as soon as possible. So that is a government restriction that applies to all activity in the initial stages, at least. In relation to the travel restrictions, again, these are not particular to golf. But one of the issues we found last year when golf was open, initially we opened with a 5 kilometre travel limit, which had a huge impact back in May of 2020. Then that eventually moved to a county, travel within your county restriction. And I mean, we have been making the case directly and consistently to government that the rigid county boundary restriction had a really unfair impact on golf, particularly clubs located close to county boundaries. And we have been making that point. So, I mean, the additional flexibility around the 20-kilometre travel from your home, even if it involves crossing a county boundary, while it won't solve the problem for every club and every golfer, it will go a long way towards alleviating that problem. And I mean, we very much hope by the early summer that even the county restriction will be gone and people will be free to travel throughout the country, and that seems to be the current indication from government. But certainly that concession around the 20 kilometres is something we argued very strongly for, because many, many clubs and many golfers were impacted by the rigid county boundary limitation. But again, I mean, these travel restrictions are dictated by government, and that's why they're reflected on our protocol that we've issued to clubs. These are not decisions that we wanted to make or did make.
But there's something you're obviously lobbying, like it's top of your agenda now, is to get those regularly reviewed at intervals based on the data government have, and hope that the travel restrictions and indeed the two household pod is reviewed at the earliest stage.
Yeah, I mean, I would be quite optimistic around the two household limitation, that if the overall direction of travel with the pandemic continues to improve, that, you know, we can get that relaxed quite soon. Because again, we fully acknowledge it's creating capacity issues for clubs if they can only, if they're limited to two household groups. And we want to move beyond that as soon as possible. But again, it will be a government decision, though, not ours.
Yeah, I know, and especially on the back of, I suppose, we benefited last year, golf benefited last year from an influx of new members because other sports were still on hold. That's the case again in the first phase of reopening with, you know, no sports returning and training for juniors. And how will you be supporting clubs then to be able to retain those members and attract new ones with the obstacles we have in front of us?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Peter. I mean, there was quite a significant influx of members, new members to clubs in the early summer last year. And I think the good news is that the preliminary data we have is that many of them have continued with golf. So I think, you know, while some people might have been trying out golf because it was the only sport available, the very good news is that many of them have caught the bug and have decided to continue with golf. And even since the announcement a few weeks ago of our resumption next week, we see an uptick in new member registrations again this year. So we're working very actively with clubs around the retention issue because, you know, it has the potential to really secure the future of golf clubs if they can grow their membership and retain that increased membership. So we've been running retention workshops. Obviously, we're not able to visit clubs at the moment because of the restrictions. Hopefully that will change soon. But for now, we've been running webinar events to support clubs, to advise them around how to tailor their packages to bring new people in and retain the people who have joined. The RNA have done some very interesting research across Great Britain and Ireland on the people who joined golf clubs right across the jurisdictions last year as to the things that attracted them to golf. So we're talking to clubs about how to highlight those issues. And the things we've been talking about earlier around golf being a safe and healthy outdoor pursuit is one of the main reasons that people were attracted to golf. And, you know, that is a real advantage our sport has, and it's one we need to build on.
There's obviously good indications then of the renewals that are coming for subscriptions this year that it's still quite positive.
Yeah, so I mean, the in the early months of the year when, you know, golf was completely shut down, it was very challenging for many clubs, and we would have heard from many clubs that, you know, members were holding off on renewing their memberships. So that was a very, very tough situation for a club to be in, and especially when there was no horizon as to when activity would resume. So in recognition of that challenge, the Board of Golf Ireland, one of the first decisions it took when it came into office at the end of February was to delay the deadline for affiliation fees to Golf Ireland, which normally would be in March, right out to the end of May, to give clubs a bit more breathing space to get their renewals in and not be under pressure to pay their national affiliation fees. So I think that has created some breathing space for clubs. Certainly, we don't have final data yet, but certainly the anecdotal feedback is that since the reopening date of the 26th of April was confirmed, that renewals have improved considerably. And as I mentioned to you, we see some evidence of new members joining too. So I think, you know, and we're very lucky and we're almost unique among sports that we have certainty about when we can resume. You know, there's so many other sports out there that still don't know. You know, they may get an answer next week, they may get an answer next month. So we're in quite a privileged position that we know for sure that we can reopen on Monday. And that is certainly being reflected in people, you know, recommitting to their clubs and recommitting to their membership.
And I suppose in that gap of when people were, I suppose, sitting on the fence a little bit on renewing their memberships, we know there were certain grant schemes to help golf clubs through this period that were administered, and you're in constant contact with the clubs. But what sort of position do you feel the golf industry finds itself in ahead of its return?
I think it's a very tough position, to be honest, Peter. I mean, we've had a year of quite limited activity. We have been happy to get, you know, considerable financial support from the government via Sport Ireland. So we were able to help about 145 of our clubs earlier in the year with grant aid to try and tide them over this very tough period. You know, we also lobbied around golf clubs being included in the Restart Plus grant and various other initiatives, and we hope that golf clubs that are involved in the international tourism sector will get some support from Fault Ireland in the near future, because they've suffered huge losses. But we have to be realistic here. Golf is resuming next week, but a lot of the revenue raising capacity of clubs is not going to come back for quite a while yet. So the, you know, the restaurants and pro shops will remain closed, the bars will remain closed. We won't have visitor golf initially. So, I mean, we're continuing to highlight that to government, and we very much hope that there will be another COVID support scheme for sport from government later in the year, which will take account of this impact, because, you know, it's all, you know, it's great for us all that we'll be able to play next week. But, you know, the clubs are still, you know, without those revenue streams, and, you know, hopefully that will come back in early summer, but it's not coming back next week. So we're very conscious of that. And, you know, our club support team are working with clubs to try and help them through this period. And as I say, we really hope that there will be more government support forthcoming later in the year. And for those in the international tourism sector who took a huge hit last year, I mean, we estimated that the green fee income that would normally come from international golf visitors at 20 million. That didn't happen in 2020. At that point, we hoped that it would be a one-year hit. Now it's very clear that it's likely to be a two-year hit. You know, if there is international travel, you know, this year it will be very, very limited, and it will be very late in the year. So those clubs have been very, very severely hit. As I said, we had lobbied for their inclusion in the Fault Ireland Business Continuity Scheme, and they are going to be included. So we hope that they will get quite substantial support, as have similar facilities in Northern Ireland who were recently given grant aid via Sport Northern Ireland, because the impact has been very severe on that sector in particular.
I'm very conscious of not taking up our full chat of just looking back and talking COVID and talking injury. Just, I suppose there are things that people do like to hear about and stuff. But getting back on Monday, we obviously have a new world handicapping system that's been in place since the last time we played golf. You have a new Golf Ireland app I seen you launched earlier on this week as well, for people to submit non-competition scores for handicap purposes, and lots of changes to contend with over the next few weeks from players as they get out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's an exciting time, but it, you know, not without its challenges. You know, a lot of new things happening. We have a new national governing body. We have a new handicapping system, which, as you pointed out, Peter, is in place since November, but there hasn't been a huge amount of golf since November, so it will be quite new for people. And you know, we've had the benefit of having a very active joint handicapping committee, the WHS committee that was formed by the two unions, the ILG and GUI, a couple of years ago. And they've done really tremendous work in providing user-friendly material for handicap secretaries at club level and for the individual golfer to improve their understanding of how WHS is going to work. We were very excited this week to be able to launch the Golf Ireland app, which, as you mentioned, you know, will enable players to submit non-competition scores, not just at their home club, but also when they play qualifying rounds in away clubs. And that's a really unique feature that we're very excited about. And when golfers have permission to play away rounds, which we hope will be quite soon, they will find that is a really exciting innovation, where they will be able to register for and record a score at an away club. So we're very excited about it. And, you know, again, you know, it's one of the improved services that we plan to provide to golfers. As you probably know, we launched a new website to coincide with WHS launch in November. So this new app is an added feature which will, we hope, be of really immense benefit to the individual golfer, where he or she will be able to see their entire playing record on their phone. They'll be, as you say, record their non-competition scores and have them included in their handicap calculation. So, you know, we hope that the people use it. The initial reaction has been very good. Lots of people signing up for it, lots of people downloading it, and that's in less than 24 hours. So hopefully that will continue.
You've released quite an ambitious schedule for 2021 as well, on the playing side, both on the elite side and for interclub matches and competition. So there was obviously huge challenges involved in determining those schedules. And how confident are you of pulling it off should the pandemic continue to improve as it is, and that we'll be able to stick to those schedules?
Yeah, I mean, Peter, what we did early in the year when the country was back in level five was we revisited our schedule for the year and took a realistic approach, which was that we were unlikely to have, you know, any potential for competitive golf until late May at least. So we revised our schedule in light of that, and that is still our schedule. I mean, you're right, it is ambitious. We're planning to run, you know, over 70 championships in total, over 30 intra-club events. But we think it's achievable, particularly if the public health situation continues to improve. We would be hoping to get these events up and running in June at the latest. So, I mean, we're quite confident that most, if not all, of our schedule is deliverable. We also have unfinished business, which is the finals of the Cups and Shields for the GUI, which unfortunately we almost got finished in 2020, but not quite. So we're also committed to completing those events, again, hopefully in the early summer. So the really good news is, despite the shutdown, I mean, when we opened entries for the inter-club competitions, we had a really tremendous response with, you know, it looks like we'll have well over 25,000 participants in those events. So very strong level of entries from the clubs, and we're raring to go really as soon as we get permission to get going. I think it's important for Golf Ireland in our first year, you know, to deliver, because it's one of the main areas of operation for a governing body is to deliver intra-club events and elite championships, and we're very committed to it.
Longer term, aside from the championships, you obviously there's a lot of programs running across Golf Ireland that are new to Golf Ireland this year. Programs like Level Par, Women and Golf Charter, they were gaining great momentum pre-pandemic, but it's obviously affected their growth in that way. And what are the high priority objectives for Golf Ireland now that the sport is returning?
Well, look, advancing the, you know, the role and participation of women and girls in golf is one of the key reasons why Golf Ireland was founded, and it's one of our main objectives. And even though we have been hindered in delivering these programs because of, you know, the various lockdowns and the fact that we can't visit clubs, but we're doing quite a lot of work remotely via webinars, very well attended webinars. I mean, we have one later this week on the Women and Golf Charter, which you mentioned, where I think we have upwards of 300 registered participants who are keen to hear about it. And given that we launched it less than a year ago, we're very happy with the uptake at club level. We now have over 190 member clubs committed to implementing it. So it's a really important part of our agenda, and we see a lot of enthusiasm in the clubs, both for governance reform and, you know, the related issue of making sure the women and girls feel welcome in clubs, feel welcome in golf. And as I say, that's a big priority. And as soon as we're in a position to engage directly with clubs, like we'll be rolling out, you know, various participation and development programs at club level, hopefully by midsummer, but, you know, we're not exactly sure on the timelines yet. But as soon as the public health situation allows, we'll be working directly with clubs to grow their participation. We're planning to launch a new junior golf framework and policy in the very near future. You know, the implementation of that will again be a key priority, because, I mean, that's the future of golf. Renewal, like every other sport, we have to bring new young people in, boys and girls, enable them to try out the sport, make them feel welcome, give them access to facilities, and, you know, very, very many of our clubs are very committed to that, and we're committed to supporting them.
And with so much resources aimed at bridging the gender gap in golf, was it disappointing last year, I suppose, to see that most of the influx of new members last year were predominantly male members?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an ongoing challenge around women and girls' participation, and it's not unique to Ireland. It's a feature. I mean, our participation rates are higher than the neighbouring nations of England, Scotland and Wales, but lower than some of the Northern European countries. So there's a lot of growth potential there. And that's why we're going to put resources behind it, because you know the rate of participation is too low now. But I think we, you know, creating a single governing body is part of what we have to do. You know, we now have, gender balance requirements in all the decision making at regional and national level in the new organisation. And, you know, it's proven that all of these changes help women and girls to feel more welcome and more welcomed in the sport. So this is not a problem that's going to be overcome overnight. I mean, we've got to invest in it. We've got to invest time. We've got to invest resources. But I mean, we're very encouraged by the initial reaction of our clubs. There seems to be a very, very healthy appetite to advance this agenda at club level. And that's where ultimately it's going to happen. I mean, we can lead and we can help, but you know, it's the clubs are going to be the first experience that new people are going to have of golf. And, you know, we're very, very committed to fostering a very welcoming and open and inclusive environment at club level. And we think our clubs are very much up for that.
And to use the tagline, I suppose, of 20 by 20 campaign, if she can't see, she can't be. It really is encouraging to see that we have so many great female ambassadors in the game now on a global stage. But Leona Maguire has done recently, Stephanie Meadow, Olivia Mahaffey, still an amateur and producing. And you've such a tranche of these young girls, female women golfers coming out and really setting the stall out for amateur and professional golf.
Yes, Peter, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, they are absolutely wonderful role models, and the fact that they're performing at such a high level in the LPGA, and hopefully Olivia will be joining their ranks relatively soon. I mean, it's really tremendous for women and girls golf to have role models of such stature for girls to look up to and to aspire to what they have achieved. And, you know, it's going to be very exciting later in the year where we, you know, two of the women you've mentioned will hopefully be representing Ireland in golf in the Olympic Games. And, you know, that again is a, you know, wonderful showcase for Irish golf and Irish women's golf. And, you know, in the amateur ranks, we have so many girls who are really doing tremendously well in the amateur ranks, particularly in college golf in the US. So the future looks very bright, and you're right, I mean, for women and girls to have such, you know, powerful and strong role models to look up to is a real asset. And I'd say a lot of golf organizations in other countries would love to have them.
And us getting back to golf, obviously a cornerstone of the events we spoke about earlier on, and inter-club competitions, it's heavily reliant on volunteerism. And like going back, we worked on protocols with the GUI and ILGU back before on, like I think there was a special week dedicated to volunteers and promote volunteerism in the game. And how important is that going forward to build on that success and incorporate that into Golf Ireland? And despite COVID, is that appetite still there, you feel, from a club level of getting active volunteers involved in the sport?
Yes, Peter, I think it really is. I think the commitment is as strong as ever, and the need is stronger than ever, because, you know, part of what we want to achieve in creating a single governing body is that we're going to have more activity, and the volunteers are the lifeblood of golf. I mean, we're a very small team here up in Carton in Maynooth. You know, we can help to organise and we can help to strategise, but the delivery of most of our activities is supported by volunteers and would not happen without the commitment of our volunteers. So I think, to your question, I think there is a huge appetite for existing and new, and in fact new volunteers to come forward. One of the things we have done as a new organisation is we've opened up the process for people to come forward for our national board, for our golf subcommittees at both regional and national level. So there, we've had an open process around each of those over the last number of months, and it has been astounding, really, the number of people who have come forward and made their case for appointment to either regional subcommittees, the national board, the national subcommittees, which we're in finalising at the moment. Really top quality people, some experienced in volunteerism, some new. So there's definitely a strong appetite. And part of what we're trying to do is to open up the process so people feel that if they have something to offer, that they have a route to pursue their interest. And of course, we can't accommodate everybody who's applied, but it's really encouraging, at every level to see such a strong interest. And even back in October, November, when we had our elections for our new regional structures, much higher number of candidates for every position than we could ever have dreamt of. So again, I mean, what that says to me is that volunteerism is alive and well in Irish Golf, and that's going to be absolutely mission critical for the future, flourishing of the game, which is what we're here to aim for, really.
It's been an extremely tough time, I suppose, in governance for Golf Ireland, for golfers up and down the country, in getting back to golf. We're nearly there. We all have goals as golfers throughout the year. Businesses have KPIs. We're all accountable at some level and have goals, aspirations and targets. But what would you constitute a successful first year in your mind for Golf Ireland?
Well, Peter, apart from getting our new organisation fully operational, the immediate and most important priority is to achieve the full resumption of all activity. Now, to an extent, some of that is out of our hands, in the sense that what happens with the COVID pandemic will influence it. But that is number one priority. We want to get golf back to normal. All of the activities, all of the revenue raising streams that our clubs are used to having, that we get those in place as soon as possible. Another important priority is to deliver, as you put it, the very ambitious programme of championships and inter-club competitions this year. That's a really, in our first year of operation, we have set out an ambitious programme. We're very determined to deliver it, because that is where the golfers at club level get to participate in competitive golf. So that's a really important priority. And the final one I would mention really is to support our clubs in growing their membership and retaining their members, and modernising their governance. Again, that's an area where we've seen huge levels of enthusiasm at club level to modernise the way they run their operations. And we have a strong team here in Golf Ireland headquarters that is helping clubs through that process. We've published a very detailed governance guide for clubs a couple of months ago. We're now running at this point remote education events to help roll that out, and as soon as we're allowed to do it, we'll be engaging on the ground with clubs through that process too. So we have an awful lot to do, and we have a lot of targets to achieve, and Monday is really the start of achieving them, because we have our first step back into what we're all about, really, which is playing golf. And I hope, despite the frustrations of the last 4 months, which have been many, the golfers of Ireland are looking forward to getting back to doing what they love, and that's why we're all involved in this, because we love the sport. And that's what everybody's itching to do, to get back on the course. The clubs have been dusted down. Hopefully people are booking their tee times in advance for next week, and we're all looking forward to it. And that is really when, I suppose, it becomes a reality for us. We're not talking about the resumption, we're actually doing it. And as I said at the beginning, hopefully it's the last time we're going to have to reopen golf.
And touching on that again, I suppose, hopefully it is the last time that we have to restart, that we get back and we stay back. But as a governing body, what can Golf Ireland do to make sure that, I suppose, that happen? And more importantly, what can golfers on the ground and clubs do to ensure that the sport doesn't have to be put on hold again?
Well, look, Peter, some of these things are out of our control. I mean, you know, there are no guarantees, as we have all learned to our cost in the last year. There have been so many twists and turns in this pandemic. You know, one can never be certain about what's going to happen next. But the things that are within our control are how we adhere to our protocols, how we keep golf safe, how we make sure we don't become complacent in terms of, you know, social distancing, hygiene. You know, the very basic things that we all know about, but they are the most important protections against this disease. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that golf clubs were so diligent in keeping golf safe last year is the key to why we're first reopened this year. And, you know, I think for the things that are within our control, compliance and keeping, because we, you know, everyone in golf, we have, you know, we have communities, we have families that we're part of, and we want to keep them safe, and we want to keep our own membership safe. So I would say, you know, continued, you know, diligence around keeping golf safe is what's really going to stand to us.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate your time. I think we've touched on a lot of subjects there, and I hope people get a bit of insight as to what is going on behind the scenes and what we can look forward to in our return on Monday. So thanks for taking the time to join us.
Great. Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you for your time.
So there we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that listen, little bit of insight, and thanks again to Mark for taking the time to join us. We've only a few more sleeps to go before we can hit those fairways again and get back playing golf. Hopefully it's the last time we'll ever have a break away from golf, and we have all this behind us for now. So enjoy your golf wherever you're playing next week. Hope everyone gets a game in and gets out, gets a bit of fresh air and gets back to it. So as always, you can keep up to date with all the latest Irish golf news on irishgolfer.ie, or touch base with us on all of our social channels at Irish Golfer Mag. If you did enjoy the pod, please subscribe, and we've plenty of other episodes there you can listen to if you just search. And leave us a review or subscribe, and we'll be back again next week. So thanks again for tuning in, as always. Bye.